from Stick Jackson now. Vatanen out to center. Morgan Geeky refines the handle. He'll dump it in.
I gotta wonder why they... Oh, boy.
Look out. They score. The Canes jump on it. A loose play for Nino Niederreiter. Gift wrapped. And Carolina cuts the lead in half.
This is the Canes Corner Podcast with host Adam Gold, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Now here's the host of the Canes Corner Podcast, Adam Gold.
Welcome to the Morning After Podcast. I am Adam Gold. We are brought to you by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina for everything for the exterior of your home. It's the Aluminum Company of North Carolina, aluminumcompany.com. Windows, siding, roofing, you name it, they've got it at the Aluminum Company. Maybe if they had some power play tips, we could send the Carolina Hurricanes over there. Nothing really good today as the Boston Bruins beat Carolina 3-1 and they take a 2-1 series lead. There was really not much good, including the Andrei Svechnikov third period injury that looked bad, and hopefully it won't be as bad as it looked. So we'll see. Hopefully he'll be able to come back, whether it's in this series or the next one. This series ain't over. I know everybody gets two down after a loss and two up after a win. Canes were terrible today, still somehow managed to have a chance to win that game in the third period. Peter Mrazek was excellent and kept Carolina in it with 36 saves. But ultimately, Carolina's team game, awful. Pretty much not start to finish because I thought the first period was pretty good. So we'll talk about what happened in between game two, which was a really good Carolina performance, and game three, which wasn't. We'll talk about another disallowed goal, which was the right call. Nobody's complaining about it. Did the puck probably go in? Sure. Well, it eventually did go in, but did it probably go in before it was poked away from Jaro Halak? I think it was by Jordan Staal, probably, but there's no way that video was going to show that. I know the videos that are out there, I don't necessarily trust that the speed is true, but look, I don't think anybody, nope, I haven't seen anybody complain that the Hurricanes got jobbed out of a goal. I do not think they did. Puck management was a serious problem for Carolina, which was credited with 13 giveaways in the game. And for the third straight game in this series, Carolina got dominated in the faceoff circle. They lost 33 of 58 faceoffs. They were beaten 57% to 43%, and it really came into play on the first goal of the game, which we will get to. Let's get to the scoring plays. I thought the best Carolina looked. And by the way, Alec Campbell will join us in just a little bit, host of Stormwatch and Aftermath. Best Carolina looked all day was on a very early power play with Anders Bjork in the box it was Brad Marchand in the box for tripping just 12 seconds in. Carolina went on the power play, and it was probably the best they looked anywhere in the game right off the hop. Carolina had four shots in the power play. I believe they hit a post as well, and just didn't score. Did everything but score on the power play, and you thought, all right, team looks good, off to a good start. But that was, I mean, while Carolina was good the rest of the period, it was kind of like one of those football games where everybody's playing between the 20s, so there's nobody really scaring you to score a goal, and you're just kind of moving up and down the field. That's what I kind of thought the first period was, but I thought Carolina was good in the first. Boston was good, too. It was a good, entertaining, up-and-down, non-threatening first period. And then it was over, and Carolina was terrible from that point on. And they had to kill off what amounted to a double minor. Didn't amount to. It was a double minor on Trevor Van Riemsdyk. Whether or not, I know Tripp Tracy on the broadcast and on Twitter said that he should not have been given the second minor because his stick came around because he was pushed in the back by former Hurricane Joakim Nordstrom. But they gave him 4 minutes, okay? And Carolina killed off the first penalty at the end of the first period. Thought a very good penalty kill. And then Boston started the period on the power play, had, I believe, a minute 58 left, and it didn't quite take a minute 58.
Now Boston starts their power play. Brad Marchand gets a tip. He scores! Charlie Coyle off of a funky bounce off of the backboards. As Mrazek makes the initial save on Marchand, Coyle baseball bats it home, and the Bruins take a power play goal and a 1-0 lead.
All right, so here's how that whole thing happened. The Bruins won the faceoff at center ice to open the period. Believe it was David Krejci did a cross-corner dump into the corner to the right of Mrazek. And it was really a bad read by Brock McGinn, who had coverage on Marchand. He took an outside lane, and Marchand ducked inside. And then, on the way through, also lifted McGinn's stick. And Brock was helpless at that point. Dougie Hamilton was there, but Marchand had a head of steam, and Dougie could not stop Marchand from getting the puck. Marchand put the shot on net. Mrazek batted it down, I think with the blocker pad, I believe. But it bounced straight out to Charlie Coyle, who basically hit a line drive single to center field right over the shoulder of Mrazek. Peter made the initial save. Nothing you can do about it. 1-0. Did Carolina break down there? A little bit. Boston made a great play. Win a faceoff at center ice, and that doesn't happen. But that didn't happen a lot today, as Carolina lost a bunch of faceoffs today. So Boston has a 1-0 lead. Carolina looked okay for like the next 4 or 5 minutes. They actually had their best chance of the second period after Teravainen stole the puck from Brad Marchand, and it was ended up on the stick of Aho.
Teravainen with a steal to Aho. He wrists one. That hits the crossbar. Aho had an opportunity in the slot, but the crossbar helps the Bruins, and now Marchand back the other way.
Yeah, that was the only really dangerous part of the second period for Carolina, who got outshot 20-8 in the second period. 20-8. They got 30 shot attempts for Boston in the period, 17 for Carolina. It really was a miracle that the Hurricanes left the second period only down 1-0. Carolina had two other pretty good chances to score. Jordan Staal fed Brock McGinn in the slot, but it was kind of through traffic, and maybe it was deflected. It did hit McGinn right in the tape of the stick, but he couldn't handle it, so they never got a shot off. And then later in the period, Warren Fogel, really an unforced error for him. He had the puck in the slot with room, but lost control of the puck. And in both cases, Carolina did not get a scoring attempt there. And you know, if McGinn and Fogel are getting basically two of your three good scoring chances of the period, then that wasn't a good period. And it really wasn't. It was one of the worst periods Carolina has ever played. So we go to the third. Carolina did get a power play right towards the end of the second period. The first 30 seconds of it, they did not score. Actually had about 25 or 30 seconds of 6-on-5 time, as it was a delayed whistle. But the Hurricanes had good possession, but just didn't get anything great on goal. And we'll talk about why in a second, because it was the antithesis of what happened in game two. And then Carolina starts the third period, fresh ice on the power play, lose the opening faceoff. Boston eats a little bit of time off, but Carolina just could not get clean entries on the power play. Could not. And maybe they can study a little bit of what Boston does well, because Boston is not afraid to just throw the puck into the other corner and go get it. But Carolina likes to skate the puck into the zone, and they were absolutely unsuccessful doing that today. But with, about 10 seconds left in the power play, The Bruins picked up a loose puck in the neutral zone. Charlie Coyle did. He skated in, and Sean Corrali, was there, and Corrali kind of deflected it past Mrazek, and it's 2-0, and that was ultimately the death knell for Carolina. And look, the Canes' power play has really not been good. The numbers in this series are now 2-for-11. Obviously not good. That's not tragic, but you want more power plays even if you don't score like the first one, when you're dangerous and can start building some momentum. And when your power play is as bad as Carolina's has been, remember the power play that they had toward the end of game two, even the game they won, where they had a power play and Boston basically had the puck almost the entire time in Carolina's zone. It looked like Carolina was killing off a power play rather than trying to score on one. And today, for other than the first one, Carolina's power play was awful. Yet they scored a power play goal somehow. We played it at the very beginning. This is a power play goal.
Some stick checks, and now Vatanen out to center. Morgan Geekie refines the handle. He'll dump it in.
I got to wonder why they... Oh, boy.
Look out. They score. The Canes jump on it. A loose play for Nino Niederreiter. Gift wrapped. And Carolina cuts the lead in half.
Here's the thing about that power play goal. It was the last 30 seconds of a terrible power play. Carolina couldn't get the puck into the zone. They couldn't set up. They couldn't really get any kind of shots on goal. Couldn't get traffic in front of Yaro Halak. And ultimately, they did try to dump and chase. They didn't do a very good job of it. Yaro Halak goes behind the net, gathers the puck, and he could have easily just passed it into the corner to Charlie McAvoy. But he tried to pass it up the middle of the ice, and he didn't get, I guess, enough on it, and he just passed it right to Nino Niederreiter, who caught it like a first baseman, dropped it to his stick, and just shoveled it into an empty net. So Carolina didn't even earn the goal that they got in the game, which was, unfortunately, that's what we saw today. So they got it back. It's 2-1, and you think you get some momentum out of that, and Carolina was okay for the next few minutes, but they weren't. They were never good. It just were never good. And Boston pretty much dominated from there. They outshot Carolina in the third period, too. I mean, that's the thing when you think back on it. You know, the third period, you want to be desperate. You're down a goal. Then you're suddenly down 2 goals. You think, all right, now you're going to throw everything at them. And Boston outshot Carolina 12-7 in the third. It was just a terrible, terrible game. That is unfortunate. Here's the best part of the game today. The best part of the game today was Peter Mrazek. Carolina's goaltending will not be the cause of them not winning this series. They have had the better goaltender in 3 games. Peter Mrazek with a little magic, stopping Brad Marchand in a wraparound attempt.
His backhand, strong move, curls around, and Mrazek with a big save as he's got to extend from post to post, and he robs Marchand. And Boston has a break. In on goal, it's Kasha, and Mrazek with another big save here in the period.
What a huge save. He knows Kasha well, both Czech-born players.
Look, Peter Mrazek was the reason Carolina had a chance to win this game. The reason. He was very good, much like game one. Mrazek was very good in game one. They came back with Reimer in game two because it was a quick turnaround. They came back with Mrazek here because, again, about 36 hours separated game one and game two. So I have zero problem with going to Mrazek. They didn't lose this game because of Mrazek. They lost this game because, basically, the 18 skaters in front did not play well enough either individually or as a unit. Couple of things. And then we'll take a break and we'll speak with Alec Campbell. What happened between Game 2 and Game 3? I guess you could almost say what happened between Game 1 and Game 2. Carolina not good in Game 1, got what they deserved. Carolina in Game 2 got what they deserved because they were excellent. And in Game 3, got what they deserved. Here's the thing about playing Boston. Their team defense, which starts with the forwards. I mean, I don't even know how many forwards Boston has that aren't good defensively. But Bergeron, Marchand, elite defensive players. Krejci, great defensively. Charlie Coyle's good. They're all good defensively, it seems. And Boston's defense really starts with the forward group and hounding pucks. Their forecheck is very good. Brad Marchand said after the second game that they felt they didn't get in on the forecheck well enough. Well, they pressured Carolina in Carolina's defensive zone all game long, and Carolina didn't have an answer. And I mean, that's to me, that's as much of the difference in this game as anything. And if you go and see where Carolina's shots came from today, there were almost no shots in tight on Halak. Almost none. And if you're the Hurricanes, you got to get to the net. And they didn't do that. They did it in game two. They lived in front of then Tuukka Rask, and we'll talk about Rask in a second. But they didn't live in front of Yaro Halak in this game. All right, let's do the Rask Halak thing in a, for just a quick second. One, Tuukka Rask had some interesting comments after the game, game two, talking about not being able to get engaged, and you know, does it feel like a playoff? Like, you know what? I can't tell you he's wrong because everybody feels differently, and we're getting a lot of piped-in audio when we're watching on television or listening on the radio, which makes it sound like a normal game, but it's obviously not. There's no crowd noise at all. There's no ability to do anything like that. So you know, to have that in the game. So I get it. So he opts out. And that's fine, his decision. And his team will have to deal with that, and I think his team is fine with it. But if you think that Yaro Halak is not a capable goaltender, then you're crazy. All right, Alec Campbell is here now. So let's chat about these things with Alec Campbell. I just started to get into the Boston goaltending thing. So let's just start there, and then we'll kind of work our way through the game. Personally, I think that way too much was being made of that in terms of Boston's Vezina Trophy-winning goaltender. Halak's an outstanding goalie with playoff experience, and he has played a lot over the last 2 years. So Boston's using a goaltender that they have used a ton of, and he also has the ability to be really good. I don't think he had to be really good today. I think the long-term effect of not having Tuukka Rask in net is probably worse than the short-term effect, and it certainly didn't bother Boston today, except maybe it made him play better.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on all of that. I wasn't necessarily like shocked from the standpoint that I wasn't necessarily worried about it from the standpoint of this is going to be a harder test for the Hurricanes or this is going to be an easier test. I mean, I was a little surprised just at the sudden nature of the announcement of him just suddenly, you know, being like, I'm not coming after, you know, I was fully expecting him to play. But he hadn't really been good. So kind of like you alluded to, I think in the second intermission or first intermission, we talked about this and I had the same thought. And I think a lot of other people did too, is that maybe it actually proves what he said was that he's, you know, he wants to be with his family. There are quotes about him never actually feeling very comfortable in the bubble. Maybe some homesickness type stuff or whatever. You know, and then you look at his performance and maybe it all kind of ties together a little bit. But like in terms of Halak, I mean, it's just like I was more interested in maybe the mentality of the team. I mean, I could see a scenario where the Hurricanes might have been looking forward to seeing Tuukka Rask again today. And that maybe the fact that Halak comes in, you know, now you wonder, okay, well, how is this going to turn out for us? But, you know, Eric Cole made the point on the pregame show that whenever you do get a goaltender in this type of a situation, it actually puts the rest of the team in a little more of an alert mode to try to help this guy out,
right,
who has only seen one game in the bubble so far. So that would have been my concern if I was Boston, is just, the lack of action that he's seen, not the pedigree or the experience or, you know, the success that he's had in his career, because that was talked about a lot before the game. Halak's no slouch. So it would have been more like, okay, well, he hasn't seen any action in a while. And I think that can, you know, put the rest of your team, you know, into action a little bit more to try to hunker down. And look, Boston's already a good team defensively. Yeah. So it's a really tough, they're a really tough team to beat on a lot of levels. And I think they helped their goaltender out a lot today. And I thought he was pretty good, but I also didn't think Carolina, they didn't get to him. I mean, they put on the same number of shots in the second and third periods as they did in the first period alone. And I credit a lot of that to Boston, but he was good when he had to be. Canes beat him a couple times. I think they hit two posts and were unfortunate. But, yeah, I mean, I'm with you on, you know, on the outlook. Like, I wasn't really that worried necessarily. Like, I didn't look at it as a huge opening for the Hurricanes that Halak was coming in or, you know, any kind of, like, I was just kind of shocked at the sudden nature of it. I wasn't expecting it.
Alec Campbell, host of Stormwatch and Aftermath. You can follow him on Twitter at AlecCampbell5, is joining us here in the Morning After podcast. All right, what happened between games 2 and 3? I think we've already alluded to it. Carolina got inside Boston's defense in game 2, in the second and third periods of game 2, and they made life difficult for the Bruins, because once you can get inside, they collapse, and now you've got opportunities from the flanks, although the goals primarily came from in tight. That mm-hmm. did not happen in this game. Carolina, if you look at their heat chart, in terms of where their shots came from in this game, there was nothing around the net. They Boston closed that down, and whether Carolina didn't work hard enough to get inside of it or what, maybe that's the only answer. They were essentially as non-threatening as you could possibly be in a playoff game. And I know Boston's great, but Carolina just did not threaten anywhere near the Boston goal.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, in game 2, yes, I think you're right. They did get inside a little bit more, but I'm not sure they got in a ton. I mean, they got in more than they have, but I thought they were opportunistic with the opportunities that they did get in game 2. And I think that's really the key, because Boston's, I mean, they just don't allow you to get a lot of pucks through, and they just don't allow you to get inside that much. So when you do get there, you got to make. But the Hurricanes did that in game 2. They got in there a few times, and they made the few times they got in there. Today, they never even got there. So they didn't really even have any opportunities. And, you know, it's a tough style for the Hurricanes. I mean, they really, it behooves them to score the first goal so they can get Boston chasing a little bit. It might open the game up a little bit, which works in the Hurricanes' favor, I think. But today was just, and you know, Tripp said they came out flat, and I would agree with that. And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the diagnosis for why that happens or how you prevent it from happening. I think that sometimes it just kind of happens, and the Hurricanes, for whatever reason, they just didn't have it today. They didn't really have any part of their game. The only part of their game they had was their goaltender.
Right.
And other than that, I mean, there's really not one thing that you can point to that was good. I mean, they scored a power play goal, but it wasn't really a power play goal because Nino Niederreiter was just lurking around and happened to get hit with the puck.
Yep.
I mean, good on him for settling it and, you know, not freaking out in the moment. But it was a mistake by Boston more than it was anything else. Not to mention the other 4-on-5 power play that the Bruins scored on again. Do they have another shorthanded? I can't remember.
Yeah.
They've got 2 shorthanded goals in this series.
No, they have just 1 shorthanded goal in the series, but they had the power play, Carolina's power play, where Boston controlled the puck in the offensive zone the entire time.
Oh, right.
That wasn't a shorthanded goal. Yara Halak clearly has trouble reading the Mike linebacker. and right. did not notice Nino just lurking there, sitting down, waiting for the tight end to cross, and Halak hit him with a perfect pass. That was Carolina's offense. It was really disappointing because, I mean, Carolina, once you fell behind 1-0, and they actually had a pretty good chance. The Aho chance when Teravainen stole the puck from Marchand, probably 5 minutes into the second period, came pretty soon after the Boston power play goal. And Aho beat Halak. He just rang it off the bar, and that was it. That was probably Carolina's best scoring chance of the game. They had a couple of others, one McGinn in the slot, one Fogel in the slot. Fogel just really just fumbled the puck on his own. I thought McGinn was probably more harassed into the mistake. But, I mean, these are the opportunities you had, and you didn't, you know, really cash in on any of them. But they were just dominated in terms of shot attempts in the second and third period. And that, to me, is the disappointing thing. Let's quickly talk about Andrei Svechnikov's injury, which to me, two guys just battling. I know there were some people who thought it was dirty. I didn't think it was dirty. I thought it was two guys battling, and Svechnikov's skate looked like his right skate got caught under him as he went down. And that's obviously that sucks. And it's easy to say, well, he's out for X amount of time, but it would be a miracle probably if he came back in this series. We don't know the extent, so I'm not going to speculate on it. But let's just assume that he's not going in Game 4 Monday night. Ryan Dzingel, I'm going to guess, is going to draw back in. Puts a, you know, now it changes the makeup of your team because you are missing not only your second-best goal scorer, but you're missing a major part of your physicality.
Yeah. There's really no replacing it. I mean, it's a horrible injury. I had really no issues with the way it all happened. I mean, Andre gives that stuff out as much as he takes it. And he was down there battling, I guess, with Chara. And Chara kind of jerked him backwards a little bit.
Yeah.
And it was just awkward and uncomfortable, and I really have no interest in watching it again. I feel like I watched it twice, and that was probably twice too many. I mean, it didn't look good, right? I mean, it looked like a knee or an ankle or maybe both. He was grabbing at his knee. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him the rest of the series, and frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him for the rest of the playoffs. I mean, that's all in the cards.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be, a wet blanket on everything, but it's a possibility. If they were to come out and say Andre's, you know, he's out for the rest of the playoffs, like, I wouldn't be shocked about that.
I mean, if it's a torn ACL, you're talking about the beginning of next season too, because next season's going to start. Yeah. My guess is sometime in December, maybe January. But that's got to be a 6 to 8 month recovery, maybe more than that, if it is a torn ACL.
Yeah, and then, I mean, other than that, I mean, yeah, I would assume Dzingel comes in, and I'm just sort of trying to go through the lines in my head. I mean, do you don't consider breaking Aho and Teravainen up at any point, do you?
No.
Because those two are probably going to end up being your most formidable scoring pair at that point, so you probably want to keep them together.
It becomes a product of, and this is the thing that we, and when I go back and look at Game 2, Carolina was dangerous because the Trocheck Svechnikov Natchez line was outstanding. Aho, Teravainen, and Martinook in the second two periods were Carolina best best periods, and that line was impactful. I think Martinook brought a lot of energy to that line. Today, the Trocheck line was not good. I thought Trocheck was largely invisible for most of this game. And I thought Carolina just had puck management problems all game long. And that was not, you know, concentrated in one person. That was, I believe, pretty much everybody. But they just never got any depth going. They were not dangerous throughout the lineup like Boston was, man. We notice Charlie Coyle, David Krejci, Bergeron, Marchand, we notice them every single time they're on the ice.
Yeah.
And today it was watching a whole bunch of 13, 46, 37, 63. And I'm like, okay, who's playing for Carolina? And that was the way I felt like watching basically the entire game.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch. I mean, not in a good way, but I mean, Bergeron, Marchand, Krejci, like those dudes, they just seemingly are always engaged, man. And like, it's just a different level that they bring. Honestly, there are guys for the Hurricanes who play well, but I don't know that there is anyone better in the league than those two guys that just are engaged every single time they're on the ice. It's pretty incredible to see those dudes, and they're shining, man. Bergeron's dangerous all the time. He missed one today that, you know, I just don't expect him to miss very often. Marchand, you know, had a great chance if it weren't for an outstanding save from Peter Mrazek, who flipped the pad out.
Oh, the wraparound.
Going post to post. Yeah, on the wraparound chance.
That was great. Yeah.
But yeah, those dudes are just, they have a physical presence to them. Even if they're not running around hitting each other or hitting people, they play the game with such a physical nature to it, such force. And just such engagement and activation. It's really a thing to watch. I mean, I don't know that there's anyone on the Hurricanes right now besides like maybe a Svechnikov who plays that way. And even Svech doesn't do it, I don't think, as consistently as them.
Yeah, it's funny on that wraparound try that Mrazek did make a great pad save on. Marchand kind of worked Slavin. He kind of deked him to the inside, and Slavin went down as though to block a shot or something, and Marchand just skated him around. And then it was incredible that Mrazek was able to get over and get his whole pad there. And he pretty much had that whole, the bottom of the goal covered. So really a great save there. And then Marchand really makes the first goal for, 12 seconds into the period. Faceoffs have been a problem, by the way, for Carolina. They've lost the faceoff battle in every game. They lose the opening draw of the second period. Krejci snaps it in, to the right, into the corner to the right of Mrazek. Marchand takes a better read on the play than Brock McGinn. You and I talked about this. Dougie was there in support of McGinn, but Brock did such a poor job of slowing Marchand down, and then Marchand got his lifted McGinn's stick as well, just to make him completely useless. And then he put. I mean, it was a good shot. Mrazek makes a good save, but then Charlie Coyle is there for. Was that a line drive single to center?
Dude, I mean, he just takes it right out of midair. It was like on a tee for him, and he just caught it flush, and just whacked it in. I mean. And I'd like to see, you know, that's where I'd like to see Dougie maybe come in with just, you know, ready to pile drive someone, you know, like, and maybe he didn't have the time or the space, or he was too,
there was no
too
time.
Far behind it.
Here's the thing, because you were right about it was McGinn's mistake on Marchand. If McGinn takes a better read, then Hamilton can worry about Coyle. But Dougie ended up being caught in no man's land. And he couldn't react quickly enough to Marchand, who got by McGinn, and then he couldn't get back to Coyle. That happens so fast. But it's interesting. Yeah. In the third period, Carolina down one. Again, it was a miracle they were only down one. In the third period, when Carolina starting with 92 seconds of a power play, Carolina loses the opening faceoff. They lose possession of the puck. They lose time, and then they couldn't get the puck in the zone on the power play, basically. After the first power play, every other power play was atrocious the rest of the game. I mean, the other four were just terrible.
Yeah, it's amazing, too, because that power play, like you mentioned the one good scoring chance the Hurricanes had, the Aho try off the Teravainen pass, but that first power play, like when we saw that to open the game, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like this might be good Hurricanes hockey today, because that might have been the best looking power play of the entire postseason. And I know they've scored power play goals already in the postseason, but that one was, the puck was moving around. They got a ton of danger off of it. They hit a post. Willie was involved. I mean, I was thinking to myself, they got four shots on that power play. Like, this is going to be a thing. So that was, I mean, if Aho had the best scoring chance, that was probably the second best scoring chance on that power play, and they couldn't get it to go. But yeah, other than that, it's so funny that they could come out and have that good of a power play, and then the rest of them just go completely to crap. I mean, the rest of them were just entire crap, including, you know, getting a shorthanded goal scored on them. So, I mean, there just really wasn't, again, one aspect of the game that went well for them.
Yeah, and they have Monday night at 8:00. Do you think we're going to see Mrazek again, or will we see James Reimer?
Man, I can't call it, bro. Like, and frankly, I don't want to. Like, I'm kind of done guessing right now. I'd be cool if they went back to Mrazek. You know, 39 shots, I think, was a total. I mean, that's a fair amount. He had to do a fair amount of work, but he's got the day off tomorrow. My guess is they go back to Peter Mrazek, but if he decides to go to Reimer, I'm good with it.
Yeah, I mean, Reimer's made 70 saves out of 73 shots on him. Mrazek stopped 36 of 38. The empty net goal was not on him. So he faced 38 shots. He stopped 36, and he was outstanding. I don't fault him on either goal. You know, one was a deflection on the shorthanded goal. The other was that baseball batted goal of Charlie Coyle. Now we have to just see how they're going to play without Svechnikov, because I assume they'll be without Svechnikov. And, you know, it's funny. I didn't hate Carolina's team defense today. Carolina, for all the puck possession Boston had, they didn't have a gross amount of incredible scoring chances. They had a normal amount of scoring chances, I thought. So I thought Carolina defended, probably out of desperation, pretty well, but their puck pursuit was horrible. I mean, literally, you know, in soccer, they call them 50-50 balls, right? Or a wide receiver and a defensive back, a 50-50 ball. What do you think? Right. What do you think Carolina's percentage was of coming away with pucks? Loose pucks.
The only one I can remember is Tara Vinen stripping Marchand on the chance that you mentioned.
Right.
Other than that, they didn't win any pucks.
Yeah. And that was the problem. They just could not get the puck. They had trouble clearing the zone. They had trouble possessing the puck. At some point, it was just like, just chip it back out to center and hope that everything's okay. But other than that, it's still just a 2-1 series deficit, and we have game four coming up Monday. We're back to a normal time, 8:00, so we'll all be up very late Monday night.
Yes, looking forward to that. Love the late games. I'm just kidding. I love the morning games. If they play, I'm considering moving to the West Coast so that I can do Hurricanes games from California
at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Alex, if they were at 6 a.m., I'd get up and do them.
Thank you very much for doing this.
All right, brother. I appreciate you.
Alec Campbell. Follow him on Twitter at AlecCampbell5. Stormwatch Aftermath host. Joining us here on the Morning After podcast. And that's a wrap. 3-1 final. Boston beats Carolina. They have a 2-1 series lead. Game four is Monday, 8:00, 7:30 airtime on the radio on 99.9 The Fan and on Fox Sports Carolinas. It's not a national game, not a national exclusive game like today's was, so there was no Fox Sports Carolinas coverage. We just had NBC. We got to hear John Forslund do the game as well. So it's always cool to hear, I'll call him Johnny Hockey, during the game. This is all brought to you by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Everything for your home exterior needs. Aluminum Company, decking, roofing, siding, windows, gutter helmets, all of it can be found at the Aluminum Company of North Carolina on Hamlin Road in Durham, aluminumcompany.com. Boston 3, Carolina 1. Boston leads a best of 7 series, 2-1. Game 4 on Monday. We'll talk to you then on the Morning After podcast.
You've been listening to the Kane's Corner podcast with Adam Gold. Don't forget there are many ways you can listen to this podcast, including streaming at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, and you can also subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and TuneIn. Thanks again for listening to the Kane's Corner podcast.